This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we are talking to a legendary figure. Deborah Jordan Cobble is with us. Debbie has been a friend for a very long time. She is the subject of Bud Hopkins' book, Intruders. That happened to her. And we're going to find out exactly what that is in a little while. She has written her own book, Extraordinary Contacts, about the astonishing life she has lived. And she and I have been struggling for quite a while now. We recorded this entire conversation yesterday. And when I tried to get it off of the Zoom, it was black. We tried two tests today. One of them simply never came up. The other one eventually worked. So I'm hopeful that you will hear and see this. And if you do hear and see it, just know that whoever is the ghost in this machine has finally let us do what we've been trying to do for 2 days. Debbie, welcome to Dreamland, and God help us both.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I'm always happy to be here and talk with you. And I'm glad that the powers that be have sanctioned it finally.
Hopefully they've sanctioned it.
Hopefully,
Debbie,
yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm sort of on tenterhooks here, hoping that it'll come out, because I don't really know. But you and I, you take two close encounter witnesses together. Ann used to say that I had electroleptic fits, and that's accurate. I actually do have, I walked into a friend's house in Texas a few years ago, their TV, their stereo, and one of their computers blacked out and were destroyed, had to be replaced. They still remember that very vividly. In fact, they always, when I go to their house, they say, Whitley, how calm are you? I was in France last summer, and they have these electronic cards to use you have to buy these electronic magnetized cards to use in, get in and out of the metro. And I would buy a magnetized card, get it to the to the gate, and it would already be dead. I had to buy them and rush over to the gate, and they wouldn't last for only a few seconds. So it was really very frustrating. Okay, well, listen, let's, that aside, Deb, you have not been on Dreamland in a while, and I always love having you on, so, because two close encounter witnesses together aside from accidentally shocking each other to death or destroying Zoom, it's fun to be together. And I want to ask you, I want to sort of start out not at the beginning. We're going to go into Intruders and into the depths of this over the course of the show. Where are you with this now? Before we started, you were saying that you know, sometimes when they're not in your life, you miss them. I do too. I feel the same way.
Yeah, that's an odd thing. One would think that's an odd thing for somebody like me to say, especially when my beginnings were so traumatic and scary, you know. But at this point in my life now, yeah, there have been periods in my life where it's been very quiet, particularly after times of great trauma, like when my husband died or the tornado, and it got very quiet and for a long time. And all of us, and then when I began to, I felt alone in the world. I'm like, what did you do? Abandon me after all this time? And then something always comes up. And there's been a couple of times when I've gotten fed up with the whole thing and with everyone involved in it and didn't want anything to do with it. I'm done talking about it. Leave me alone. I just want my life. I just want a normal life. But something always ends up happening to drop kick me right back into the middle of it. So I guess I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah. And, you know, you're pretty much an ordinary person like me. I'm not a fancy professor or anything.
Mm-mm.
And I don't know too many close encounter witnesses who are.
You know, I've here lately, Since I wrote Extraordinary Contact back in 2021, 2022, I've kind of come back into the whole field in a way, and I've watched a lot of conversations between academics and scientists and folks like that, talking about my experience, not me particularly, but the experience of contact with an HI. And I watch them go back and forth with their hypotheses and their thoughts and everything, and I think to myself, I'm right here. I was there. I saw it. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. And I'm sure there are millions of people out there just like me who would also be happy to answer. But it's almost annoying to me because it's like we're here, but they just want to talk about it. They don't really want to
Yeah,
talk
they
to
don't want us to
us.
have any agency and any say in it because they
And I
want
just
that
and
for
I realize.
themselves.
I have a high school diploma and a beauty school certificate. That's what I always say. So I realize I'm not in the league with these people, but I am a witness to, I'm a firsthand witness to things. And in the courts of law in this country, firsthand witnesses' words are taking, you can convict somebody on a firsthand witness account in the court of law. So why aren't you listening to experiencers? That's what I think
Well, yeah,
nowadays.
because the truth is, if they can't get their head around the fact, and this is a fact, that the experiencers were mostly chosen because they were smart people like you, who were not in the mainstream of the educated culture. They were outside of it, like me too. I'm not either. I mean, I have a college degree, but it's not much of one, and when I was sent to London to go to London School of Economics, I went to the film school instead, much to my father's surprise. Anyway, we're not in the academic stream in that, and or the scientific stream. Gary Nolan, who is very much in this and is a big major scientist, had a couple of minor close encounter experiences, but it's not like us. We live this. The experiencers live it. And we are outsiders, profound outsiders.
Well, that's very unscientific,
Yeah.
honestly. For a bunch of scientists, that's really unscientific.
Something is definitely off.
Yeah.
They are afraid that uncredentialed people who are full of what they call woo, which is this childish word to describe our experiences, will alienate the larger community. Well, the larger scientific community is already alienated. It's going to stay that way until there are aliens walking out of people's hip pockets. Simple as that.
Now, people, regular folks like me, I don't consider you a regular folk to me. I've always looked up to you, but you're something special. But I think that the woo part is what gets people, the main regular people's attention, because they have that too. I've met so many people over the years, and while they can't always remember seeing an actual UFO, they do remember having a weird experience like the ones I've talked about, and they relate in that way, and then it makes them think and their minds open up more. You know what I mean? It's like I always feel like now I've seen enough and heard enough that I feel like almost everyone has a story. If they don't,
Yes.
they're either lying to themselves because of fear or whatever, or they're not paying attention because it's out there and it's all around us. Everything is happening all around us. So, I have been fortunate. I'm more fortunate than most people in my position, and I know that. Even though I was in the middle of nowhere here in Indiana for many years before the internet, before cell phones, with all the weird things that happened to me, I'm fortunate that I had my entire family supporting me because they also had weird stuff happen. And people around me, family, friends, even coworkers, and even people that once they found out about it, like when I moved into the apartments with my kids, when I finally moved out of mom and dad's, got my own place, I became friends with the single gal that lived above me who had a little boy about my kid's age. And we got friendly. And eventually I told her a few weird things that happened because things were happening around the apartment. And one day she came downstairs and she goes, I love you to death, but weird stuff never happened to me till you moved in here. So,
Yeah.
and I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't really have control over it. But this part of the phenomenon is important and should not be ignored. There's a lot of data buried within the woo that somebody needs to pay attention to. That's just my
Yeah,
opinion.
they do need to pay attention to us, and I hope it changes. I hope they get
Me too.
More comfortable with what we have to offer, which is real, actual experience, and not just theorizing, because you can theorize about this all you want, but all the theorizing in the world is not worth 2 minutes of experience face to face with NHI or non-human entities, the grays, or whoever you happen to be face to face with, because it's exciting no matter who it is.
It's like I said, it's the flavor that it's the thing that makes life flavorful sometimes. Well, sometimes it's a little too spicy for me, but it just like I said the other day when we were speaking, I feel like I woke up. I feel like I woke up and I'm aware of so much around me now at my age and at this time in my life, as opposed to back in 83 when the event that sparked Intruders first happened. I was maybe a partially way there, but I still had so much fear and trauma and anxiety, and it was stunting me, I think, and holding me back. As a matter of fact, during one of my quote unquote downloads, which we didn't use that term, but in the 80s, I just thought weird things in that would come in my head and I would write them down. People call them downloads now, but one of them was for me to, whatever it was, didn't want me to be afraid because it would slow down the process, whatever the process was that I was supposed to be going through. And I can see that now when I'm far enough away from it, I understand. And I don't know, I've worked through a lot of my fear and anxiety with this whole phenomenon, so.
Well, speaking of working through, why don't we? I would like to go back now to the early years before Intruders, before Bud was in your life, or any you wrote the letter to Bud or anything like that. And there, what were the first hints that something strange was happening in your life?
Well, I think one of the first things that I can think of is I used to play outside a lot, and we had a swing set in the backyard, and I used to like to hang upside down on it to see if I could make my hair touch the grass. And I would look up at the stars at night while my mom would burn the trash out in the corner of the yard. And I would look at the stars and I would think of everything on the planet that I knew of that could happen or could experience. And I would think in my little, first grade head, that's not all there is. I know there's much more, and I belong out there. And I used to feel, I said, homesick for a place that I've never been, that I'm aware of. I'm lonely for people that I knew were out there that I loved, that I missed. And here I am in my family with mom and dad, my siblings. And yet I felt like I was missing some other people somewhere, And in re ret I didn't realize it at the time, but in retrospect now, I'm like, I don't think most kids feel that way when they're little, And then I had a strange experience with my older sister when she took me. It was about the same time, about the same age, about six, five, six or something. in that area. She took me to Detroit with her. It was right after she got her driver's license, and she had taken me up there to play with another little kid who was a sibling of the girl she was going up to visit, who their grandparents lived next door to us, so they would come every summer to play. So anyway, Kathy took me up there with her. I ended up being missing the whole day. I had memories of going into a house that I thought where I was supposed to be, but things were jumbled up, of encountering a little boy my age who wanted me to come into his playroom and play with his neat toys, and then feeling all of a sudden afraid and trying to run away. And as I'm at the door of this house to leave, this person, I think it's his mother, comes out of a back room and she sees me and she's mad and she says, "Why is she here? She doesn't belong here." Bam, it feels like someone shoves me out the door. And at the end of the pathway, at the sidewalk, there stands my sister. My sister Kathy was about 12 years older, 11 years older than me. So there she stood, and all I remember thinking was, "Oh, I'm just relieved that Kathy's there." And I grab her hand. She takes me back to these people's house, and then we go home. We drive back home. Apparently, they were looking for me all day, and then my sister is the one who went out on her own and came back with me. And when Bud came to do the investigation, one of the first visits, he came to Indiana. Of course, he's had the whole family around the table, and he's like, "Does anybody have memories of any other weird stuff around Debbie or any of you as well?" And mom starts talking about, "Remember the time you were missing in Detroit?" And I'm like, "What?" And Kathy starts talking about it. And I remembered the little boy. And Kathy actually got the phone number of the people that we had gone to visit. She still had connections to them. So Bud was actually able to call her, the mother that was at that house, and confirm that yes, Kathy and I did indeed go up there for a weekend. I did indeed come up missing for the whole day. The police were out looking for me and everything. And then Kathy is the one who brought me back, found me, went out and found me and brought me back. So those are a couple times when I realized there's something different about my life. And yet also, my sister had an experience in 65, which I had heard be talked about, and I just assumed that everybody had these kind of experiences, and I just thought that everybody did. It wasn't until I got in school and started talking that I realized, well, maybe not quite so much. But so it's started off for me pretty early in life, that for me to realize that things I was maybe a little different, or my family was a little different.
A little different. Okay. Now we're going to do
Just a
something
little.
else. We're going to do something else a little different, which is we're going to take a little break and it's going to be very different. We'll be right back. We're talking to Deb Jordan Cobble, her website, debbieshome.com, her book, Extraordinary Contact. And it's been out for a bit, but this is an ever-evolving, extraordinary experience, and I like having Debbie on the show from time to time because there's something about certain close encounter witnesses. We're on the same wavelength, I guess, would be the best way to put it. Now, you've had encounters with children. We've been talking about your childhood. Let's shift now, and go to. Tell us a little bit about this whole business of children and who was the woman and the little boy? Why was the mother so annoyed at that you were there? You didn't belong there, but where were you? No one knows. But tell us about other children you have encountered. And I think you've encountered some of your own, as I recall.
Well, I had a strange experience with a couple of girls when I was a teenager, out in the country. That was in November of, I think, 77. And then I was engaged to be married to my boyfriend the following June, and found out I was pregnant in January, I believe. I have all my doctor records from it. And then, we weren't planning on having a baby right away, because I mean, I would just we were kids, but we wanted kids someday. When I found out I was pregnant, it was like, oh, okay, well, we're gonna get married. So we moved the wedding date from June to April, because it was the 70s, but it was kind of a different time. People thought differently of things than they do now. I didn't want to go down the aisle giant pregnant, you know what I mean?
My
So
grandmother used to say it's perfectly normal for first babies to come a little early.
yeah, there you go. So we moved the wedding date up, and one night I was babysitting for my sister in early March, and I had a weird dream of some type. What I fell asleep on the couch with my back to the door, and when I woke up the next morning, I was in my niece's bed, which is where I would have slept anyway. But when I woke up, I thought, oh my God, something is wrong with my baby. And I couldn't shake it, even though everything appeared to be fine. So eventually, my friend, who actually, it's odd because she was also the friend I was with that previous November, out in the country when the three of us saw a light in the sky and something weird happened. Anyway, she took me to Planned Parenthood, and I had a pregnancy test that came back negative. So I freaked out and had my. I told my mother there was something wrong with the baby and I need to go back to the doctor. Because at this point, I'm still living with my parents until I get married. I'm still living with mom and dad. And they, because I just turned 18 in February, and I was still on dad's insurance. So mom took me to the doctor. He gave me another pregnancy test, another physical exam. And then we went to his little office, and he says that I'm not pregnant. And I'm stunned. My mother says, well, what's wrong with her? Does she need a DNC or something like that to that effect? And he said, no, she's fine. And he looked at me, and I remember him saying to me, and now this was the 70s, I was a teenage girl, but he says, you are young, you're going to have other children. He goes, we see this from time to time. My advice to you is you're healthy, to just forget this ever happened. And of course, now I would say a million things, but when I'm 17, I just sit there stunned, and my mom's stunned. So we go home and we never speak of it again. Charlie and I still got married in April, and we went on to have two kids, two other kids, two boys. And but I had a couple of what I called dreams where I actually saw this child, but she was with those gray things that I'd seen in my bedroom when we were first married in 1978. And it was in 1978 in my bedroom that I tried to wake my husband up with so he could see. And this girl was with them, and they were short and she was smaller. And I remember her looking at me, and I'm thinking to myself, that's mine. And I thought in my head, I want to hug you. I want you. And when I had that thought, she panicked and ducked behind them. And it made me sad, and I started feeling like I was going to cry. And then I got mad, and I asked if I could take her home with me. And this gray guy said to me, no, you can't. She would not survive with you. And then later, I guess it was several years later, I had another. This was during the day, and I wasn't asleep. This was not a dream. I was sitting in my apartment kitchen. I was having a cup of coffee. I smoked back then. I was smoking a cigarette, having a cup of coffee. I just happened to glance out the patio door when I saw somebody staring at me between the slats of the security fence that was around the privacy fences around my apartment backyard. And our eye connect the blue eye connected with me, and I noticed a blue eye, lots of white hair, and all black clothing all the way down. And it looked like a kid, maybe 7 or 8 year old size, from what I could see in this slat. And then I thought, why would a kid be wearing all black? This is and I and for some reason I thought of her again. And I jumped up and I ran out the door to run out the run out the back of the gate, open the gate and run out. She was gone. And I ran behind the apartment buildings, down the side of it, looked between each apartment building, didn't see anybody there. And I felt in my heart, it was again, it was that child who would have been several years older. And then even today, when I see somebody that resembles what I thought I saw that day, she would be almost 50 years old now. She would be like 48 years old because my oldest son is 47. So she'd be little past 48 years old. I will look at people's faces still and wonder, is that her? You know what I mean? I don't
Yeah,
know.
and I know the feeling. I have the same feeling from some of my experiences. And people always say, "Well, do you think you were encountering something biological or con and or was it, what level of reality was this?" And I always think it was this reality. And what is your how real were they, these kids?
It was very real to me. You
Yeah, me
know,
too.
all of it was very real to me, but at the end of the day, I don't know anything for sure other than what I remember. I mean, and my limited capacity to perceive what goes on around me. You know what I mean? With I'm limited by this brain I have here
Yeah.
for to get the whole picture of things. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, it was a solid 3D real kind of thing that I could touch. So.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the one who was peeking in the window. You reacted to her, but why was she there? Why was
I don't
she
know.
looking at you? Do you have any sense of that?
You know, that's what I don't know. When it dawned on me, when I realized somebody was looking at me, you know how you get that feeling somebody's looking at you, turn around, somebody
Yeah.
surely is looking at you, you know? Well, I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee and smoking a cigarette, and I feel somebody's looking at me, and I turn and see her. And at first I'm thinking to myself, oh, who is that? What is going on here? And that's when she popped in my head. And as soon as the thought of it being her and not just some little random kid in the neighborhood, you know, when that popped into my head and I was kind of, and I jumped up, it's like that's when she startled and took off running. But
Yeah.
I don't know why it would all unfold that way. It didn't have to be like that, you know, so I don't understand why that. Why it happened that way, if that's truly what it was, which I feel it was.
I've often wondered if the children of these disappearing pregnancies have a sort of curiosity about where they came from, because we had one too, Anne and I did. We had a disappearing baby, pregnancy, and then later we were shown a baby. And we then years later the strange boy showed up in our backyard in upstate New York. And I'm not, people already know my experience pretty well. There's a very maternal thread in your whole experience. There's children, and there's a, you start to get married, and a baby mysteriously appears and disappears just as even more mysteriously after, because after all, it's not that mysterious when a baby appears by accident. But
No.
when a baby just disappears, that is very mysterious.
That is very strange, yeah.
Yes, and
I was kind of shocked when the doctor said to me, "We see this from time to time." Like
did
he
he
wasn't
ever
that big a deal.
elaborate on that?
I have no idea what he meant by that, and he didn't elaborate to me on that. That was just a comment he made, which stuck with me. But the older I got and the more I learned about things, the weirder I thought it what weirder comment I thought it
Yeah, because
was.
if it had been an abortion, that's easy to see. A doctor would see that immediately.
Or a miscarriage, any
Or a
even, you
miscarriage,
know,
either
but
one,
no,
yeah.
yeah.
But not just a disappearing fetus, that's a different story.
No, so that was surprising to me that he said that, and that was something that always stuck with me. And you said something a minute ago about being maternal and feeling maternal and wondering about them. I always wondered, I still do. I mean, my mother was adopted. My mother was adopted from an orphanage in Louisville, Kentucky, by a master sergeant in the army when she was 2 years old. So I understand how adoptees' minds work sometimes. Watching my mom, and I've watched shows about it, and it seemed to be that for the most part, with a few exceptions, the adoptees who have been separated from their birth mother eventually have this internal drive to want to reconnect with them, and will search for them. So in my mind, I wonder sometimes, is there someone out there who thinks of me like I think of them, who has thought about their mother and wanting to reconnect? I mean, whether that'll happen in my lifetime or not, I don't know, but it's always been something in my head. It's always something I've carried with me. Just a longing when,
Yeah, and you have to think about emotions. You see these things, children, and then you have a different set of emotions now than you did then about them. They're still part of you in a sense, and it's a part of you that's very incomplete. That's how I feel about the boy, because I felt, I just regret so much not being better at trying to calm him down, and he seemed to want to be in our life, but to not know how to do that. It's very, very distressing.
And I felt terrible when I had the thought in my head that I wanted to grab her and hold her, and hug her. It's like she could hear my thought, and it scared her. And I felt terrible that I had scared her with just thinking that. And then when I think about it, I probably look like a big, giant, clunky gorilla compared to those little gray guys. And I probably would be scary to a little kid who had never seen anything else. But I didn't think about that at the time. And then I felt bad, that I scared her that way.
There's a sense of unfinished business. The whole hybrid thing leaves us with a sense of unfinished business. Now, when we get back, we're going to get into the arrival of an amazing man in Debbie's life, and a man who saved two lives, one here and one talking to me. Debbie and I both are here because of Bud. We'll be right back. We're talking to Debbie Cauble, Debbie Jordan Cauble. Her book is Extraordinary Contacts. It is certainly worth your time. Get into this, because the more people can get into this, the better we off we're going to be if non-human entities ever do show up in our world. And it could happen any day. And if it does happen, it's going to be a tremendous shock. And people like Debbie are here to cushion that shock as best they can. And that book is a really good example of that. Her website is debbieshome.com, and can also it's a she's a really, we don't have any agency, because the visitors, I think, are careful to choose people without scientific credentials or academic credentials, so that as this becomes more and more known, we are sort of being shut away, and all of our experience is just being thrown out in favor of the academics and the scientists talking to each other about something they don't essentially know anything about. But that's the human experience, isn't it? Anyway, Bud was not like that. Bud was different. He was an artist, and he had experiences, and he saw people were suffering, and he reacted. He tried to help you. Tell us about meeting Bud.
He did help me. I reached out to him after the June 30, 83 incident because I felt like I was losing my mind. I had done everything I could do to figure out what could possibly have caused all the things that were happening.
Now, this
And
is the experience, folks, of the tell us a little bit
it was,
about
it's the
it, just to set the
experience.
scene.
Well, it was the June 30, 83 was the experience that the book Intruders centered around. And that was, an experience that left a mark in my mom's backyard, resulted in the death of my dog after about 8 weeks. The mark in the yard lasted 2 or 3 years. Snow melted off of it. It damaged my eyes. The coax cable that ran from Dad's antenna that went across the mark, the plastic on the outside stayed intact, but the metal inside all melted together. Transformer of the swimming pool blew up. Just all kinds of weird stuff happened. There were external witnesses. There was two different separate witnesses, one on one side of the house and one across the street, to that night and the explosion that they heard, and other people who were involved sort of on the peripheral of it who were affected by it. So it was a big thing that happened, and it left a lot of trace evidence that was not typically found in most reports of UFO stuff. And when I wrote to Bud, I had learned of Bud's address through a book called Missing Time. He had put an address, how you could contact him, in the back of this book. And I had inadvertently picked it up in the library, tried to read it, a few months before this happened. It was freaking me out, so I had to put it back. Then I went back to get the address, wrote to him, and then, thus started. After, I guess, mom mailed the letter, it was a few weeks, and he called, and then the investigation that commenced. It's 2 years and some change long. He came to my house a few times. I went to New York a few times. I had to sell my washer and dryer out of my storage unit to buy a bus ticket to go. So I was on a shoestring. Yes, he was an artist, but he was a very compassionate and very intelligent man, and he wanted to help. And I reached out to him hoping that he would tell me, no, it's not this. It's this and this and this, and you'll be all right. It's not quite what happened, but it now at my in my life, I can say with 100%, had I not had that experience in 83, had I not met Bob Hopkins, there's absolutely nothing about my life today that would even be remotely recognizable. Nothing. And I don't even know if I would be here or not, because when I reached out to him, by the point that I reached out to him, I really think I felt like I was having a nervous breakdown. And I thought, I cannot lose my mind. I have a single mom. I have two kids that are depending on me to not be crazy. And I have got to get my shit together, and I need help. And I reached out to him because I didn't know, I didn't want to get medicated and put in a round room. I was afraid
Yeah,
if I
me
told
neither.
anybody, like a doctor or something, they would just automatically assume I was crazy. Hell, I was worried about being crazy myself. So, but he left no stone unturned with me. I mean, he had I met with Dr. Clamart, the psychiatrist. I had psychological testing at this hospital in New York. I had an EEG. I had a CAT scan. I had a voice stress lie detector test eventually that he arranged here in Indiana. And I remember when the man did that test, he was blind. He didn't have any idea who I was, what the questions were going to be about, who Bud was, anything. And when it was all said and done, Bud told me that he thought the guy was a little bit shook because, and he said to Bud, I cannot tell you that a UFO landed in her yard and messed up her grass and made her sick. He said, but I can tell you that she believes that it did. And Bud said, that's all I need to know. So, I mean, he did a lot of, and he came out to Indiana several times. He went knocking on doors, trying to look for witnesses, and he found them. I mean, he was very diligent, and he did as good a job as anyone in that time could do, and he was did it with compassion and caring,
Yeah, he was the same with me. I probably would have done myself in if it hadn't been for Bud, because I felt like, Ann was going to have to be saddled with a lunatic, madman, and a crazy person and couldn't take care of her. And I thought that she's better off with the insurance than some nut in her life like me. But I realized it was when we went to Seabud that I realized that there was actually something in this. Although at first, I mean, we first saw him and we just thought it was just the most ridiculous thing in the world. And then he gets in touch with, he wanted to hypnotize me, and I said, "No way, you're not a professional." And he proceeds to get the best forensic hypnotist probably in the world at the time, Don Klein. How he ever got to Don, I don't know, but he did. And that changed my whole life because I believed Don's capabilities and skills. He was the real deal. He could prove it. He had plenty of cases where he had successfully solved crimes using forensic hypnosis. And, you know, after my book came out, there was just waves and waves of stories about how hypnosis doesn't work and lie detectors don't work. But that's all lies. The hypnosis in the hands of a good professional does work, and lie detectors do too, and which is why to this day the CIA uses them routinely, and so does every other intelligence service in the world.
Yeah,
Okay.
I believe hypnosis is a useful tool when it's done correctly.
Yeah,
For sure.
exactly. Of course it is. But anyway, things went south with Bud because of something my publisher did without my knowledge. Basically, Bud and I were planning to publish our book simultaneously and to go on tour together and everything. And because my publisher, one of the editors apparently said that they were going to get pressure from the government not to publish the book, and they just sent the book out to public to every bookstore in the country literally a few days later. Because they were afraid that the government would stop them otherwise. And I did not know that until quite recently. And Bud ends up with a letter in his hands from me explaining what we're going to do together and the dates and everything. And gets a call from his editor saying, "Whitley's book's been published, it's already out." And he blamed me and he got furious at me and he never forgave me. So that happened, and but that doesn't mean I don't love Bud and respect him. I do. So, okay. Now, let me ask you a deeper question about the babies and the whole thing. And what in the world do they need these children? What, you know, like the one I met and got to know a little bit was so defective, the poor kid. And why are they even doing this? Do you have any sense of that?
I don't know, but I do have a memory of one of the gray guys being surprised, actually. I never got any emotion from any of the other ones around, but there was always one. It always seemed like this one particular one is one I was familiar with, like I'd seen him probably my whole life. And of course, I said before when I realized that that I thought that baby, that child was mine, and I was angry. He seemed to be surprised at my anger. He didn't understand it. They didn't speak to me with actual words sometimes. They kind of threw my emotions back at me, or images, or things like that, and in communicating. And I kind of got a message like, "I don't understand why you're so mad about it. This is a good thing for you and for me." And I, what that means, I don't know. I have since had a communication. I had one time a voice told me that the grays were our future. And so I don't know if, they have some agenda to fix something in the future that got messed up in the past, or that got messed up, and they need us for that. I don't know. I don't. I really. I have theories, my theories, and ideas. But at the end of the day, I just don't know.
You know, I wonder about the government and the abductees, and It's one thing is very clear. They're on this, because if you do anything along the lines of, if you even say alien abduction on a description of a podcast, for example, Google will flag it, and it's a phrase that I, if their AI may hear it in this, and they may flag this. And that's because somebody really does not want this to get out there. What they don't, I think the main, I always think that there's two main reasons for the secrecy. The first is that they've spent a hell of a lot of money and gotten nowhere. And that's always a big reason for secrecy. The second is probably us, because I know they knew. David W. Webb came out to our house, and he was a big space scientist, a major guy, and reported to every alphabet agency in the country. And when I mentioned him on a couple of big podcasts on Area 52, I think, and on maybe another one, you know what happened on Wikipedia? His entire CV was removed. All of his work in the intelligence community, his work in space sciences, was just cut out of his Wikipedia entry. So
You know,
they're
it's funny.
watching.
I just went on Wikipedia the other day to somebody else told me to look something up for somebody about someone. So I did. And then I thought, oh, I'm going to type my name in and see what happens. There's nothing. I have no Wikipedia presence at all. At least I didn't. It didn't pull anything up when I typed my name in. So I don't know. That's, I just thought it was kind of weird. Because, I mean, if you
Yeah.
type my name up in Google, you'll find all kinds of craziness. But
Well, your name, you're a major witness, and you should be in Wikipedia,
no,
obviously.
not that
They've
I'm not saying I
intentionally,
want to be.
no, they, I don't think you should want to be, because whatever they put in will be BS,
Yeah.
but you certainly should be.
I just thought that was kind of weird because, you know, you can Google up all kinds of not, you could, there's some good stuff. People have sent me videos that I was apparently, you know, on shows and stuff back in the 80s. And I think, oh my God, look how
Yeah.
young and fat and I sound like a hillbilly. And I mean, that's shocking. But, it, you know, I just thought it was kind of weird. I'm not
Well, we live in a
complaining.
world where too many people are just so credulous they'll believe any damn thing. And I it worries me, because there's I'm friends with Graham Hancock, and we're both having trouble with AI generated things with us on them, with voices that sound like us that we never said. And
Yeah.
I think that social media is dying. I think it's being buried alive under a flood of nonsense and rubbish. Because you go onto Twitter, or now it's called X. I used to go on there, and I would see a lot of things from my friends and stuff that mattered. And now you go on, it's just one BS thing after another, and all kinds of hysterical clickbait.
Yeah, I deleted my ex account a couple years ago, because I just was had no more patience. So
And I have a few fake Whitley Strievers on Facebook, and I sent a complaint into Facebook. You know what they sent back? A form letter saying it doesn't violate our community standards.
that's just so crazy.
I mean, it's insane. They for someone to impersonate another person and use their picture and everything,
Yeah.
and it doesn't violate their community standards. What community standards do they have? I think the answer to that is pretty simple. None.
None.
Unless you're
None.
an alien abductee, no, we can't have you.
Oh, I
We
got
can
my
have an
account one
avatar of
time.
someone made up, but not you.
Facebook shut my account down for like a whole week one time because I shared a video of a man trying to teach his bird how to say I love you, and then somehow violated their community standards. I'm like, okay.
Okay, so
Whatever.
someone steals my identity, that's okay.
That's
But
okay.
you have a cute video of a bird,
Yeah.
and that's not okay. That's
And they will cut you right off.
that is we ought to all put up videos of people trying to teach birds to say I love you and
I
see what
know.
happens. Crash Facebook with I
Yeah.
love you.
I love you.
That would
Kill him
sort
with
of fit
love.
the personality of Jeff Zuckerberg, from what I've heard.
Lordy, lordy.
Let's go on up. We're going to talk when we get back. Debbie's had downloads, and she's had a lot of telepathic and experiences, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. We'll be right back with Debbie Caldwell. We're talking to Deb Jordan Caldwell. Her website, debshome.com, her book, Extraordinary Experiences, Extraordinary Contact, Life Beyond Intruders. And you've had a whole lifetime of, I would say, hyperdimensional experiences. You live in, like most of the other close encounter witnesses, we have active participation in more than three dimensions.
Yes,
We live
I believe so.
sort of at the edge of time and reality. So you've had telepathic experiences, and you've had telepathy. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I don't know if it was an like a side effect of early contact when I was young, or if it was something that I was always born with, which made me a better candidate for contact, or if it was something that developed after contact, over time. Intentionally, but it's there, and the more I use it, the better it gets.
Do you use telepathy?
I use I use when I look, I see with more than my eyes, and I hear with more than my ears. My whole energetic being is something that I'm plugged into, and I feel it, and I feel it in others. I feel things in others. I'm actually, and this all, it really started to take off after June 30, 1983. Once I was hit with that bright light, it's like I got a new wire harness somewhere, or I got a switch flipped in me. It's like I don't believe that I'm any different than any other person walking around on the planet, but I have been plugged into something. And it's changed me. I'm not the same person I was prior to June 30, 1983. My BFF of 55 years will tell you that any day. And as I experiment with things like telekinesis and stuff like that, I find that the more I practice, the better I get. Although I am kind of like I can't do it on demand. Yet I have not that much control of it, but I also feel things from people. Like I can, I'll say I'll walk past somebody at a grocery store, and if I get close enough to them, I don't even have to be too close to them, but if I get close enough to them, and they really are transmitting something, their energy is really sparked on something, I'll feel it. I'll feel it. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm just super excellent at reading body language in human beings and animals, or be, that I'm doing it subconsciously or what it is, but I can spot a liar from a mile away. I can feel it. It is an actual, literal, physical feeling that I have. And there are certain people that I, when I walk past them, and I don't know them, I don't know anything about them, but I know that when I walk past them, my physical body responds so strongly, like the hair on my arms will stand up and I'll feel this instant ick and weirdness. And that's kind of what got me pushed over towards the paranormal side in the early 2000s, and started deciding that I wanted to explore that more because I felt like it's connected. Somehow it's all connected. And also, the only thing I've discovered in my research on the paranormal side with UFO experiences, and believe it or not, a lot of people who report UFO experiences also report paranormal activity. The common denominator seems to be the human being in the middle of it, the person involved. So
That's interesting
there's
that you
that.
say that. That was a path Bud could not go down.
Nope, that he wasn't. And people are often surprised when they meet me now and they hear the things that I say, and they're like, wow, I thought she was like Bud and it was all negative and doom and gloom. But Bud, I always say Bud was in the emergency room of the whole abduction phenomenon. He saw all the broken, tore up people like me, and it really hit at his heartstrings. And, he did have a more negative view of the whole phenomenon. In a way. And I actually almost see him cringe when he read the first book I wrote with my sister, where I explored, kind of sharing a little more of the more woo side or of what had how I evolved with all this. But he honored my growth, and he just gave me a fatherly warning one time. He said, "Don't ever give them credit for what you were able to do." So, and I understood what he meant when he said that, but
That's a lovely approach. You're actually, it's very sensible.
And I understand, but I had to grow and spread my wings, and this was meant for me in a different way than it was meant for him, and I will love him to the day I die and appreciate everything he's done for me. But yeah, I've said and done things and had experiences that he would just be at his threshold of nope. So.
You know, something you mentioned in the book that I meant to bring up, and did I tell you folks, we tried to do this interview yesterday, and it was just black. Nothing happened. We tried to test it this earlier today, and the first test just didn't happen. The second test worked, so fingers crossed you'll actually see this interview. Anyway, I was wondering about the Kokomo booms. You remember that? That's in your book.
I remember it very well. I used to be a for years I was an investigator for MUFON, because one of the
Right.
ways that I deal with things that scare me is to learn all about it that I can, because to me, knowledge is power. And
Yeah, smart approach.
I became a MUFON investigator. And I did that for several years, and then I kind of retired out of that, went towards the paranormal side more. And I live in Kokomo, Indiana. And in April of, I think, 2008, we had an extraordinary event happen here. And about 8 weeks before the actual event, I had started, after years of not having any weird stuff or seeing anything, I started seeing these orange balls of light in the sky that were close enough to me. And I was out in the country one night, and I pulled over to watch them. And there was three of them appeared one at a time, and they kind of did this weird dance around each other, and then they disappeared. And I remember driving home like a bat out of hell. And when I got out of my car, I was ducking as I ran to my front porch, and I'm like, why am I even doing that? And I told my husband about it, and he said, yeah, whatever. He was not impressed. So I bought myself one of those Sony Lolux camcorders, and I was bound to determine to show this man that I had seen these. And I started going out every night, practically when I could, to try to record these. And I saw them a couple of times, but it was when I didn't have my recorder with me. And then one night I was at Jackson Morrow Park on the phone with a friend in Florida, had the camera, did not have a clue what I was doing. I butchered this poor camera. And then the orange light started popping in, one and then another. And I'm talking on the phone to my friend. You can hear me talking to my friend on the phone. I'm like, I can't get it on my viewfinder, And then I started seeing these jets coming. I live 18 miles south of Grissom Air Base, not even 18 miles. And I saw these jets coming from the direction of Grissom. And I'm like, oh my God. And the lights popped out. They disappeared. But I saw the jets. There were several of them, and they were like doing a crisscross pattern. And I was actually like right at the edge of their MOA, the military operating space where they do their training. And so I sat there for the longest time, and then I thought, something's going to happen. I feel it, but I have to go to the bathroom. Because I had drank a whole thermos of coffee. So I went home, went to the bathroom, went back outside because I kept feeling pulled out there. And I'm like, something is going to happen. something is going to happen. And I put my camera on, turned it on. All of a sudden, all the dogs up and down the street, all the animals started howling and making this insane sound, which was caught on my video. You can hear it. And then I stood out there for a long time, and then I'm like, I can't stand out here anymore. I got to go in. I went inside, got my pajamas on, was up in my office trying to get the video off my camera. I heard this loud explosion. It rocked my whole house. My whole office turned kind of an orange yellow because there were all windows on both sides. Bright flash. And I heard this thump on my roof. And in my mind, I thought, oh my God, those jets that were crisscrossing, they hit each other. Somebody collided and I'm thinking that the thump on my roof was a pilot that had, jettisoned himself out of the cockpit and landed on my roof. So I ran to get my husband to wake him up, and I said, "Did you hear that?" He's like, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." So I went downstairs in my nightgown. I'm out there looking for a parachute and a pilot, right? And then my son calls me, he was a cab driver at the time in town, overnight shift, and he goes, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "Well, we just got to come over. We were pulled off the, everybody was pulled off the road, and they've called all these, EMS emergency equipment from all the surrounding counties. And they said there's a plane crash right over there by our house." And I'm like, "That's what I heard. What was that?" So I got on, I went upstairs, and I started recording all I on the video. Computer had like a police scanner app, and I went on to the Kokomo Howard County Police Scanner app, and I just start hit record. I recorded the next 4 hours of audio, and it was insane. I heard them say, and I have it all these recordings. I heard them say they're at the only known debris site, that they were calling in other counties. Somebody said, "Can you call up to Grissom and ask them what they were doing?" Then eventually they switched it over to a private where I couldn't hear it anymore. Well, then I get a call from Jerry Sievers, who was the state section director from Indiana at the time, and I, because I had reported it to MUFON, and I also had reported the red lights, the orange balls of light. He's like, "We got something big going on there. Would you mind coming back as an investigator on this case with the STAR team member that lives in Peru?" And I'm like, "Okay." And I mean, there were 149 police reports that night. And there were a lot of people when we went out talking, knocking on doors. There were a lot of people who said they saw something get shot in the sky over the area where we were looking, and where we were at, which was just east of the MOA area. A lot of people said they saw that. Several people claimed they actually saw a UFO. A lot of people said they saw an explosion in the sky. Just it. And then the military comes back and they said, "Oh, we had a young guy with he got his foot in the pedal and hit the sound barrier accidentally." I'm like, "You can't, first of all." And then they said it was flares. You can't drop flares over a populated area. That's against the law. It's against the rules. You can't do the sound barrier over a city like Kokomo. You can't do that. I mean, we were asking the right questions. We were getting blown off. To this day, I will tell you, something funny went on. And I was not only a witness to it, but I was also an investigator on it. That is the Kokomo boom. And it made national news. And it was right around the same time of the Stevensville thing that went on there as
Yeah, I
well.
remember that Stevensville thing very well, and now the Kokomo boom, and who's right under the Kokomo boom but you?
Hello. Kokomo is. Got a little bit of a history for weird stuff with UFO, a lot of UFO reports here over the years. We have the Kokomo hum that people have been talking about for decades.
Yeah.
I have actually heard myself. And it's an interesting place. Like I said, we're about less than 18 miles south of Bunker Hill with a lot of stuff going on under the ground there at Grissom Air Base. So, I don't
Yeah,
know.
it's amazing how much the Air Force does underground.
Yeah, they don't
So,
call it Bunker Hill for nothing.
no. Well, Deb Cobble, what a wonderful time. Thank you for spending it with us. Her website is debshome.com, her book, Extraordinary Contact, Life Beyond Intruders. You go on the website and you can, there's so much stuff that we haven't even touched, like her work with electronic voice phenomena, and there's all kinds of videos and things on there. It's a really, really wonderful site, and it feels a kind of homey. I mean, it's a person, very personal site too. Very appropriately called Deb's Home. Deb, thank you so much for being with us on Dreamland.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and I always enjoy being here talking with you.
I do too with you.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Anne Strieber. I'm Quickly Strieber, your host for Dreamland.
Extraordinary Contact.